It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The writer and journalist Hendrik Hertzberg once described his work habits as undergraduate. By that, he meant he often put his work off until the last minute, then stayed up all night cramming to get it done. Undergraduate work habits also describe how Illinois lawmakers often approach their most contentious issues. Yesterday was the last scheduled day of the fall veto session for 2025, but like a college freshman in finals week, lawmakers were still at it past 4 a.m. today, running through a long list of important legislation. To run us through what happened, we're joined by Mike Miletich, state capitol reporter for WAND-TV, the NBC station for Decatur, Springfield, and Champaign-Urbana. Mike, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me, Brian. I love that analogy there because it's a perfect description.
Yeah, well, credit to Hendrik Hertzberg. I hope you were able to get some rest between what was happening well past 4 a.m. today, which was the transit bill, right? And let's start with that because we're out with the RTA, in with the NITA. What is this all about?
Well, it was known for quite a while now that there needed to be changes within the transit agencies overall in the Chicagoland region. So that's the Chicago and Collier County area. And a big portion of that was making sure that there's a unified voice when it comes to some of the decisions from the higher tops. There's been a lot of disagreements between, the Chicago Transit Authority, Regional Transit Authority, PACE, as well as the Metra. And so having one united voice is really going to help out there. And I think that a lot of people were okay with the reforms that were part of this. The reason that everything took so long to get to the finish line was due to the revenue that's included in this plan. It's $1.5 billion that's being generated to basically help out for years to come down the road. And there was a lot that changed over the 48 hours. At one point we were talking about statewide taxes on amusement, everything from like streaming services to going to live concerts and other performances, extra ticket fees if you're going to go to Soldier Field, things along those lines. The governor said he was opposed to quite a few of those ideas, including a billionaire's tax. Everybody kind of came back to the table, and it was the final hours before we got to a deal here. The biggest things we saw, the vast majority of the funding, about $860 million, is actually going to come from the state motor fuel sales tax revenue. And that was kind of a shock to some people that they're going to use that money for the Chicago Transit region. And they also plan to use $200 million in annual interest from the road fund for transit projects. Now that's what we really use for some of the IDOT projects down here in central and southern Illinois and across the whole state for roads and bridges. People in the Chicagoland area will also pay higher sales taxes and the tolls will go up higher too. So thinking of my parents and the rest of my family that have to go through those tolls, it's kind of going to hurt over there. But I think that the biggest thing that some of the downstate folks are really concerned about is there was an initial request and agreement to give downstate transit organizations $220 million out of this massive deal. In the final plan that passed out of both chambers, downstate is only going to receive $129 million. And that's a big drop, Brian.
You know, one of the things you mentioned with this road fund, I seem to remember that Illinois voters approved something called a transportation lockbox. It changed the Illinois Constitution that said road funds could only be used on roads. These are rails. How did lawmakers make sense of that?
So many times during the two debates, the box was brought up and the fact that voters chose to do this. Democrats said multiple times that the money is for transportation. And so we have the ability to use it for transit. And overall, we're helping for all different types of things, whether it's the infrastructure that's being used for rail stations or the roads that are being used for some of the different areas that are very big for buses and paratransit as well. I think a big component that helps some of the folks that are in areas outside of Chicago, they're really hoping to get rail from Chicago to the Peoria area, even talking about an expansion for the Quad Cities. It was concerning, though, for some of the folks that came to the agreement on not taking that money out of the road fund just a few years ago. I think that Democrats and Republicans, when they go back home, are gonna face some tough questions wherever they voted on this, because it could make a huge difference for some of the projects that are done on our roads and bridges in everybody's district.
Well, and I know it did come up in the debate, and one of the things that Democrats point to is if you actually look at the Illinois Constitution, which I happen to have in front of me right here, Article Roman numeral 9, Section 11, it does say transportation funds may be expended for the following dot 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 mass transit, that is intercity passenger rail. Those are some of the things that are included in that. So people can decide for themselves whether they think that lawmakers were comporting with the law. I guess bottom line, you mentioned this is shorter money for downstate, but some of the things people may have heard about earlier this week, like you said, red light or speed cameras coming into more places in Illinois, those things were not part of the final deal.
That is right. The speed cameras, which have been honestly put under the spotlight for public corruption for quite a while, especially in the southwest suburbs, the governor was very quick to shoot that idea down. He did not want to bring that back. And I think the biggest concern, think back to the original version that we saw in May pass out from the Senate, that was that delivery fee, $1.50 on every single item that was delivered to your house, whether it was medications, your Amazon, food deliveries, anything you could think of. I do believe if that one would have passed out both chambers, there would have been an uproar, and there already was by the time that it passed out in May.
Well, and like we said, that is not what happened. All right, there are a number of other things happened during this, and let me just remind listeners, it's the 21st show. We're recapping what happened in a what turned out to be a very consequential week in the fall veto session. I saw a number of State House reporters earlier this week at a gathering, it was a retirement party actually, and it's one of those things when you're going into a veto session week, it could be nothing happens, or it could be a ton of very important stuff happens, and it was actually the latter this time. So one of the other bills that came up has to do with energy prices. Prices have been really high for a lot of individual families and smaller businesses this summer. What did lawmakers do in terms of energy?
Well, that is absolutely right. Everybody knew that there had to be a solution to address these high prices, and Democrats are looking forward to clean and reliable grid affordability. Basically, they're really banking on battery storage for the future, and their big plan is having 3 gigawatts of utility scale battery storage, hopefully around 2030. Along with wind and solar projects that are already online, they want to bring more there, investing in geothermal technology, lifting the state's nuclear construction moratorium, which people on both sides of the aisle have wanted for quite a while, and also allowing state agencies to cut some red tape and allow for energy demand spike response in a quicker fashion than they can right now. Now, the Illinois Power Agency said originally that this plan could save a massive amount of money over 20 years. We're looking at about $13.4 billion in savings for Ameren and ComEd customers. But some of our downstate communities that have relied on, coal as well as the natural gas plants for quite a while now, and really got hurt when they started to see some of the closures, are concerned about the future. They argued that there needs to be a better solution for the power that gets us through every single day. They were arguing the fact that, well, wind and solar, we only get that certain parts of the day, and the battery storage can only be good for 2 to 4 hours a day. This really came down to what is the best steps moving forward, as well as investments across the country. A lot of people are investing in the battery storage, and apparently the new technology has made it a little bit safer so that there are less fires. That was a concern that some folks had leading up to that debate. It may be a while, though, before folks get to see a decrease in their bills, which I know everybody's hurting right now.
Yeah, because these, as you said, some of these projects could take years to come online. Some of the other, we can run through sort of quickly here some of the other important or interesting legislation that passed. There was right to die legislation. This is specifically for people who have terminal illnesses. This used to be known colloquially as assisted suicide, but it's formally now called in Illinois medical aid in dying, of course, if the governor signs it. What is that about?
Well, the medical aid in dying bill is controversial for quite a few folks because this would allow people that are towards the end of their life. Maybe they have a terminal illness and they're at the point where they've talked to their family, they've talked to doctors, they feel that it would be better for them to go through an assisted option. Now, there's some terminology. People have used assisted suicide before, but we're using the medical aid in dying as the option there. And this is a compassion ability for doctors to provide this to folks. You know, there were a lot of advocates that brought very, very, you know, emotional testimony over the past year and a half on both sides. You know, there are thousands of people across the state who have said that they would like to see this move on and allow people the ability to access any options available. And of course, there are multiple times that the doctor would need to confirm with a family and the person that is asking for this that they truly want it to happen. It's not just someone saying, I want this and let's just go and do it. There's a multi-step process. But there are advocates that say that, you know, some people, especially people that have developmental disabilities or long-term disabilities that don't have the ability to talk, may have situations where their family members say that, oh, they want to do this. They want to end their life sooner than they actually would. And they're afraid that this change could be drastic for so many across the state.
Well, we will see what happens with that as the governor considers it. Let's see. I also want to talk about this. Obviously, immigration raids have been a huge topic of news in Illinois. We've had a number of conversations just this week about that. A number of Illinois lawmakers, especially those who represent communities with lots of immigrants, were eager to do something with regard to these raids. Can you talk about what actually happened? Because there were a lot of ideas being thrown around.
There were many ideas. And the biggest thing that came out of this session is that there will be safety zones around some of the areas that people should feel safest in, talking about hospitals as well as daycare centers and some of the educational areas that people go to. We've seen a lot of situations where someone could be at a courthouse even, and whether they're inside or outside of the courthouse, they're being detained. So they're trying to create a 1,000-foot barrier before someone could get detained, as well as ensuring that there's an opportunity for people to file civil grievances against ICE officers or Border Patrol, whoever it is. You know, the sponsors do know that this is very likely going to be challenged in federal court quickly, whenever it is signed by the governor. But this has been on the minds of many of the Democratic sponsors ever since the raids have started. Of course, there were Republicans that say, we are also opposed to some of the things that we're seeing by ICE agents. But they're on the side of law enforcement and say that this could lead to many unintended consequences, not just for the folks that are on the ground in local law enforcement, but also the federal officials.
Yeah, and one has a hard time imagining, like, what are Illinois police going to be arresting federal agents? I know you see on social media, people sometimes sort of fantasize or speculate about how that ought to be happening. You know, people driving around with fake license plates or something like that on federal cars. But it seems like that is just not going to be in the cards here, where you're going to have, you know, sort of state and local police battling it out with these federal Border Patrol and immigration agents.
No, I think that is somewhat of a public misconception that people were hoping that could happen. And, you know, folks started to see the Illinois State Police out and about, and they said, well, why aren't you arresting the ICE agents or Border Patrol? And, you know, they work on behalf of the administration, but they're just trying to ensure that there's public safety. They can't go and arrest individuals. Now, if there's, the governor said this for quite a while, if there's wrongdoing by ICE agents, they should be held accountable, and that could be done in the courts. But I feel that there's been a lot of people saying that, oh, there should be arrests being made of these agents, and that's just not happening.
Couple of things that didn't happen. There's always we've talked a lot about that did. Sometimes it's a longer list of things that didn't. But one of those is something the governor had wanted, which is some changes to the homeowners insurance. I guess people who are State Farm customers in particular are going to see big price increases. Some of them for their house insurance. Can you talk about what happened there?
Yes, this plan is actually a combination of multiple bills that came forward from Senator Mike Hastings, trying to ensure that there's some transparency and fairness within the insurance industry. You noted State Farm with the massive increase that's happened for homeowners there, but this was ensuring that there is a opportunity for people to switch their plans if they wanted to, giving a 6-month window for people to be able to say, hey, I don't like what's available with the rates right now. Maybe I could shop around and see other options. They also wanted to ensure that there was, no areas of concern with the ways that the companies are setting rates. It had to be based on the property and not based on someone's race, their zip code, anything of that sort. And I do think that there were several areas that the insurance industry, as well as the sponsors, came to an agreement. But when it came to the timeline, that's where some of the concern was. Now, it did pass out of the Senate after a very contentious debate. And it just didn't move out of the House because I think several moderate Democrats were on the side of the insurance industry. And a lot of people say that if they were to make this change, we would have the worst insurance state than California. And there's a lot of comparisons to California because people say, oh, these rates, they keep changing because of policies. Well, we do have several lawmakers that are in the insurance industry, and they say that this is big. Oh, sorry.
Sorry, we're gonna have to leave it there, Mike. Thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us. Obviously, more than we have time that we can talk about. We're gonna have to take a break. Mike Miletich with WAND. Thanks for your time. This is the 21st Show.